Svai Vishva Shri Jambhavo
Svai Vishva Shri Jambhavo
Deva Karmatma Shaktiman
Deva Karmatma Shaktiman
Deva Bhajatmanatmanam
Deva Bhajatmanatmanam
Vikadha Dasadha Chidha
gigantic.
Virat.
Form.
Virabha.
Total energy.
Deva.
Living
in
energy.
Karma.
Activity of life.
Atma.
Self.
Shaktiman.
Full
with potencies.
Vibhavaja.
Divided.
Atmana.
By himself.
Atmanam,
himself,
Ekata,
enormous,
Dasadha,
in
10,
Chidha,
and in
3.
Translation,
purport, from Srila
Prabhupada.
The total
energy of the Mahatattva
in the form of
a gigantic
Viratrupa
divided
himself by
himself
into
the consciousness
of the living
entities.
The life
of activity
and self-identification,
which
are subdivided
into
1, 10,
and 3,
respectively.
Consciousness
is the sign
of the living entity
or the soul.
The existence
of the soul is
manifest in the form
of consciousness called
Jnana Shakti.
The
total consciousness
is that of the
gigantic Virat
Rupa, and
the same
consciousness
is exhibited
in individual
persons. The activity of consciousness is performed through the air of life, which we have 10 divisions. The air of life are called prana, apana, udana, dhana, and samana, and are also differently qualified as nada, prana, pratyaya, devadhata, and dhananjaya. The consciousness of the soul becomes polluted by the material atmosphere, and thus various activities are exhibited in the false ego and bodily identification. These various activities are described in Bhagavad Gita 3.41 as Bahusha Yantischa Nihayo Yavadashinam. The conditioned soul is bewildered into various activities for want of pure consciousness. In pure consciousness, the activity is one. The consciousness of the individual soul becomes one with the supreme consciousness when there is complete synthesis between the two. The monist believes that there is only one consciousness, whereas the sattvas, or the devotees, believe that although there is undoubtedly one consciousness, they are one because they are agreement. The individual consciousness is advised to dovetail with the supreme consciousness as instructed by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita 1866. The individual consciousness, Arjuna, is advised to dovetail with the supreme consciousness and thus maintain his conscious purity. It is foolish to try to stop the activities of consciousness, but they can be purified when they dovetail with the supreme. This consciousness is divided into three modes of self-identification according to the proportion of purity. Adhyatmika, or self-identification of the body and mind, Adhivirvika, or self-identification of the material products, and Adhidaivika, or self-identification of the servant of the Lord. Of the three, Adhidaivika, self-identification, is the beginning of purity of consciousness and pursuance of the desire of the Lord. I'm supposed to read perhaps 8 also. Eshahi Shesha Sattvanam Atmanam Shat Paramatmanah Ajovatraya Yakshasya Bhutta Gramya Vibhavati. The gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord is the first incarnation and primary portion of the Super Soul. He is the self of an unlimited number of living entities, and in him rests the aggregate creation Krishna's flourishes. The Supreme Lord expands himself in two ways, by personal plenary expansions and separated minute expansions. The personal plenary expansions are Vishnu-tattvas, and the separated expansions are living entities. And so living entities are very small. They are sometimes described as the marginal energy of the Lord. But the mystic yogis consider the living entities and the super soul paramatma to be one and the same. It is, however, a minor point of controversy. After all, everything created rests on the gigantic, direct, and universal form of the Lord. So we're getting another overview of the creation. And yesterday, it happens a few times in the Bible time, which is good for us, because in Kali Yuga you need to do everything at least 3 times to really understand it. But still I don't completely understand it. But it was nice that Nagaraj, she was very philosophical and intelligent, got to explain mostly about this universal form creation. Here it's describing more about how the living entities become conscious, along with the whole universe is becoming conscious. From the supreme conscious living entity, the supreme Lord. Through his different expansions and energies, he can do this. I believe in the Bible, I'm not much of a scholar in the Bible, but I think it says that the Lord breathed into the living entities and gave them life. So it's very similar that we're becoming conscious by the mercy of the supreme Lord. But some people have this misconception that we're all one in this consciousness, and therefore there's no difference between us, between the Supreme and ourselves. But obviously there is. I mean, if you read the Bhagavad Gita, the universal form, it's pretty scary form. And so much is going on there, and we're the temple. I mean, it is the Lord, and who are we? We can't even understand what goes on in this body. So there definitely is a difference between the cause of all causes, who is Krishna, and our little minute cells. But we can be in the same consciousness if we serve him, if we can understand that we are small, and that the small should bow down to the Supreme Lord, and be happy in that position of being very small. If we don't have that consciousness, and we think that we are one of all, then we're going to, like it says yesterday, we're going to melt in the darkness of ignorance. Not a very nice situation to melt in the darkness and to be there for who knows how long. Not a nice situation. When I was young, I really loved science courses. That was my favorite thing, biology and things like that. I just was fascinated by all the different sciences. And I think if I took those courses again, they would all be different. Because science is always changing. They say, oh, this is it. This is the facts. And you get it written in the books, and you memorize them, and you learn them. But now with technology and everything, I'm sure that the school books are entirely different in the studies of these different sciences. So are they really true facts? That's a good question. And there's all different kinds of sciences. There's the gross sciences like geology and biology, physiology, things like that. And then there's a little less defined ones, which might be psychology, astronomy, astrology, things like that. And then even finer still, you can get to ones that are spiritual sciences. And that's kind of where the material scientists cut it off. They think that the spiritual sciences are too wishy-washy, too sentimental, too unclear. And so that's out-of-the-box science. It's not really included. But we see that there is a great science. This Vedic literature is full of science. You can go in all, there's so many. There's Ayurveda, there's Dandaveda, there's the science of how to fly airplanes, the manas, and so many different sciences. I have no idea what they all are. I'm sure the Bhaktivedanta Institute over here, our neighbors over here, are studying all these different literatures from the Vedas to make their planetarium presentation. So it's a wealth of knowledge. And have they changed? No. You can read the Vedas. They were written down thousands and thousands of years ago. And nothing is different. They didn't have to upgrade or change it at all. Because it is absolute science. And you can find every other science that the materialists have in those, in the Vedic literature. And if they did study the Vedic literature, it would save them a lot of time, a lot of paper, rewriting all these different sciences, because it's already there. And it's our source of the greatest science of the soul. And here this purport is describing a lot about this soul. In particular, it's describing that the heirs of the life are in that soul, and they actually come from the heart where the soul is. This is a very subtle science. I never really studied the different heirs of the body. I don't really understand them so much, but we can understand that Prabhupada has described that the soul is there in the heart, and this consciousness is picked up by the red corpuscles, and it goes throughout all the veins and makes us conscious and aware throughout the whole body. And when the soul is gone, there is no more consciousness. So Papa was once at MIT, I believe, and did a lecture and said, so you have this big university, this big college. Where is your department that will explained the difference between a living body and a dead body. And we can describe that in detail, as it's described here, that these airs are very important for balancing and giving us the proper consciousness. The yogis, they can actually control all this through some kind of special power. I don't know what it is. But ultimately, they want to focus on the heart and the super soul. But here it's mentioned that there is the mystic yogis, they can get lost, even if they can go that far, they can get lost and think that that we're all the same, that we're the same as the Supreme Lord. So it's very dangerous to think that just by some mechanical thing we can understand everything. But we can misunderstand things very easily without the proper guidance. Tomorrow we'll learn a little bit more about each of these different airs, how they control certain parts of the body, and how the other ones, the three of the after the ten, help the other airs and help the body to boost it, boost up the power coming from these airs. So I'm not going to get into that tomorrow. But I do know that science is also in our devotion. It's so clear in our sciences of how to actually connect, like it's describing here, that if we're one in the same consciousness and the same intentions with the Lord, that we can actually have this self-realization and can learn so much about ourselves and about the Supreme Lord. So we have to learn the different processes of devotional science. As in every science, there's different processes that you have to go through to reach the goal of understanding. So we can understand that there are nine processes of devotional service. They mentioned Govindadas in his song. They are Shravana Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vandanam, Bhadasavanam, Dasya, Pujan, Satyajana, Atmana, Vedana. So we're familiar with all these different processes that we get to take part in every day. And we are slowly trying to get attracted to at least one of them, Prabhupada says, so that we can reach perfection of devotion. The goal of this science is to become self-realized and God-realized at the same time. Not confusing that I am God. So this method of devotion, it describes in detail throughout the whole book about the different sciences of this love, what happens. That it's not just a wishy-washy thing, that it's not just a sentiment, but it's actually a science, how you can actually reach this perfection of loving Krishna. And this is just a little sample I happened to read last night. I just thought it was really very scientific, just to give you a little sample. This is one of it's describing the different degrees of the ecstatic symptoms when one actually has some bhava, have these symptoms. And later on it describes that, you know, people can actually understand you're faking it. You know, people fake that, oh yes, I'm rolling on the ground, I'm doing all these things. But someone who's really understands the science can see when it's a true symptom. So it says, out of the many ecstatic symptoms of the body, the symptom of being stunned is especially significant. According to the degree of being stunned, the vital force within the body, which we're discussing now, becomes agitated, and due to such a state, the other ecstatic loving symptoms sometimes become altered. So I think Lord Chaitanya also, he would have these different imbalances of the airs due to ecstatic symptoms, and really falling down, do some other things, and become stunned like this. These transcendental ecstatic symptoms gradually develop, and in the course of such development, they are sometimes called smoky, sometimes called blazing, and sometimes called shining. These three degrees are experienced by many, many years. For many years, this can go on. It's not just like a, you know, come to the temple and then we would go on with their way. You know, this could go on for a long time. And they extend to different parts of the body. Unlike the shedding of tears and faltering of the voice, the condition of being stunned is spread all over the body. The shedding of tears and faltering of the voice are simply localized symptoms. And it goes on to describe how it goes in the different parts of the body. So you can see that it is a science that that is worthy of studying, otherwise it wouldn't be in these books. And one who really wants to get closer to Krishna, to get closer to this realization, should be studied in depth and depth. Because here it's described in the purport that there are different levels of consciousness that people can delve into, and the first one being Adiatma, which is pretty much me and mine, this body, I, this false identification is pretty heavy. You go around just thinking that, you know, it's all about me. And then a little bit further developed is the Adibhavik, which is spanning yourself into byproducts and you can make things and do things and do things in that way. And then the Adidaivik is when you really want to get out of this false conception about me, and you go more divinely into self-realization, and especially in learning how to connect with Krishna. And that's our choice. We all breathe this consciousness, and then it's up to us how far we want to go in this lifetime to understand who we are. And it's a big responsibility, and it's something that every intelligent being should consider studying. The last few days, my sister was here. She's an older sister. And she's, for the last 25, 30, 40 years, she's claimed to be more or less a Buddhist, studying, meditating. I'm not sure on that, but we got into a conversation the other night, and she said that, you know, I'm really happy, you know, that we've found the process, you know, that you've actually found something that you can really get into, and it's really helping you understand what your life is meant to be. And she says, I still don't know. She says, I still don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm not sure who I really am. And in other words, she's still searching because she hasn't gotten the answers. She hasn't really understood what the soul is and who she is. And you know, I couldn't really appreciate it. And she went on to say that that she believes that everyone has their own way to find out. But then I'm thinking, well, you know, guess what? I'm finding out and you're still in the dust, so why don't you, you know? But I didn't say that. Because she was saying that, you know, she was expressing that, you know, it's up to me to find out. And I said, well, you know, maybe some, you know, I find that I need help. That's why I joined this movement, to help to go forward in spiritual life. It's not like, you know, it's just something you study in a book and comes overnight, you know, and it's a gradual process. So I don't even get into preaching to her, but I realized that that we are so fortunate to have this process, this scientific process, that we can all gradually help each other advance. And then I realized that actually you have to take a big bite of a humble pie at some point in your life. To realize that you do need this help and that you need to get the absolute truth from someone who knows the absolute truth. And then they can put you on the path and you can have the strength to stay on the path and become purified and gradually realize all this knowledge that is there. So when we hear this about this universal form, and we have a lot of questions, but I said, just go on hearing, because that is purifying, and at least we can understand that how great God is and how small we are. Because I think a lot of these Buddhists and people that are searching, they can't get off the level thinking that they are, yes, the supreme, the part is supreme, but they don't realize that there's such a small part and that they should bow down and actually do some service. So hearing it is such an important thing. Even Einstein, with his big brain and everything, he could realize that there's a bigger brain. He was humble enough to admit, yes, there is definitely some other intelligence beyond all this. So hearing about this universal form can help us to sometimes remember that he is gigantic. I know that when I ever go walking in the woods or go hiking in the mountains, it kind of goes past me, seeing all the mountains, and say, it's the stack of the bones, and that the trees are the hairs sticking up on the body. So we can use this information in different ways, even if we don't completely understand it. Srila Prabhupada did want us to understand these devotional sciences. He gave a kind of an outline, a guide for our Gurukula system, in that they should learn English and a little bit of math, a little bit of science. But he also mentioned that the science can be that, yes, this is Mother Earth, this is Bhumi, and this is Krishna, this is your father. And that way, the science, but in relation with the Vedic sciences, so that they can not be bewildered. And he also wanted them, of course, to understand the philosophy behind it all. And in the beginning, if you understand the philosophy, and he also encouraged them to learn Sanskrit, then you can upgrade your consciousness very quickly and not get stuck way down like most people do, and never get on that double-railed path back to the spiritual world, where material and spiritual life together can take you direct and back. Otherwise, you can be derailed very quickly. I remember one personality, one couple had a son who was real smart, and he got too smart, and now he doesn't even believe in God anymore, because he got derailed. So, otherwise it's going to take a long time to figure out who we are, and it's very easy to be derailed again by Maya's attraction. Here we see that Parikshit Maharaj, he's, as we used to say in college, cramming it at the end. He sees that the end is, the test is coming, so he's cramming, give me all the knowledge you possibly can. Yeah, I'm listening, I'm all ears, He was a great soul, he knew all this, but he wanted to really tone in. So, better safe than sorry from the very beginning. We should teach our kids, and we should learn this as much as we can while we're young, and keep it increasing the hearing so that we can fix our mind at the time of death. Better safe than sorry, that we don't forget. Otherwise, it's back to, we get dragged back into Maya's little dog pound, and we sit there and hope that someone will come by, like the spiritual master or the representative of the spiritual master, to put a dog tag on us again, take us out, put Krishna's dog tag on us, on that feet, and start to train us again, and guide us, so that we come back, go back to our forever home, as they say, with Krishna. So we can learn, I learned from these purposes, not a lot about the real details of the creation, but from this need to go direct our chanting more to the heart, where the power comes from, where the airs of life come from, where the consciousness come from, and where Krishna is sitting. If we can really not just be in the head chanting, or on the tongue just chanting, or on the computer just chanting, but just try to really direct the chanting to the heart. Where we can change our intentions from me and mine to it's all about you, Krishna. And that way we can become closer to Krishna every day. And as in most sciences, especially when they do the experiments, you have to have a very clean atmosphere to to get the pure result that you want. So in our devotional sciences, cleanliness is next to godliness, so we should keep ourselves very clean and especially not associate with the contamination of the material world, contamination of the computers and all around our phones. We try to keep our intelligence focused, and that way, if we are intelligent, go ahead, study the creation, learn all these details, and just become absorbed in that if you have that intelligence. I myself, I don't have that intelligence or that attraction to sit down and study so much the real details of all these things. So, I'd rather just make cow dung patties and sit in the back of the seat and read a nutrition book, but something for everybody. And we can all reach perfection by just having that pure intention of pleasing Krishna somehow with whatever we do. There's one song that sometimes I sing by myself, but it's hard to sing with other people, but it's a song, it's called, which has to do with this whole thing that's going on here. There's appreciation by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's called Tuni Sarveshvara. I wouldn't want to call it Ninja Kid Sarveshvara, but it's a nice song. It says, O youthful son of the king of Braja, you are lord of all lords. According to your will, creation and destruction takes place in the universe. According to your will, Lord Brahma creates, and according to your will, Lord Vishnu maintains. Lord Shiva destroys in similar obedience to your will. And by your wish, Maya creates the prison house of this world. By your will, the living beings take birth and die. And by your will, they meet with prosperity and ruin and happiness and sorrow. The tiny soul bound up by Maya vainly struggles in the fetters of worldly desire. Without your sanction, he is unable to do anything. You are my protector and maintainer. Except for your lotus feet, there is no other hope for me. Now I have given up all confidence in my own strength and endeavor. Now I depend solely on your will. Bhaktivinoda is most poor and his pride has been leveled. Now he lives and dies in accordance with your will. So we can take that mood of surrender and realizing we are very poor and not very strong, and pray that Krishna helps us in elevating this our consciousness so that we can come back to him. Because he's very anxious for us to do that. So anyone have any comments or discussions on this? Maharaj?
Hare Krishna, thank you for the enlightening class. First, I just want to make a little joke, and then I'll ask some serious questions. You mentioned the importance of recognizing that we actually need help. We had some dialogue with somebody, and we're trying to help them understand that we have to get to that point where we do need help. So the Beatles had that realization, and knowing that you need help really pays off because they made millions of dollars making a movie by that name. Okay, that was the joke. Laughing is not mandatory. Now, as far as the serious question is concerned, I noticed you were starting to read from the next, I think text 8 of the next purport. I'm not sure. You were just kind of giving us a little bit sneak preview. But something in that purport, if I can ask a question from that, really knocked me for a loop, as we say in American English. That we hear all the time how the impersonalists, they think that God and the living entity, they're just one. And Srila Prabhupada would repeatedly make sure we don't fall into that mistake. But yet in the purport of the next text, Srila Prabhupada mentions that. He says the yogis consider, you know, but actually that's a very minor point. It's not very important. So I'm kind of confused because I've been trained up to consider it really important. And here Srila Prabhupada is saying, to think that the super soul and the individual soul are one and the same, it's just a minor point. I'm not too worried about it. So what to do?
I know that too. It is a major point for Prabhupada, but I think he's making it seem, he's trying to make Krishna look even greater, that all that's going on here with the creation and how wonderful God is. So he's taking that opportunity to say, yeah, they're worried about this and that, but just look how big Krishna is, how wonderful Krishna is. So, you know, if you're considering this, you're pretty stupid. You're considering that, you know, God is, you are God and everything, how stupid you are. Because look at this universal form, it's so great and everything. So I think he's just trying to make it a little bit more obvious. If you think that you are God, you must be really blind, really deaf, because what's going on here is you know, obvious that we are not disciplined. That's the only way I can see how he did that. Let me look at the comment if I can.
I can get easily that we're not the body. What I get less easily is we're not the mind. Can you give me an example to help me understand that we're not the mind?
Yeah, the mind is a subtle body. And it does carry with us over and over again. But I wish I had complete realization that I wasn't the mind. But it is subtle. It can change. You can have some people lose their minds, right? They're still there, they're the same person. You can lose the attention of different diseases of the mind. You lose your learn how to remember, you can't remember anything. Just like the one person in our community, Richard's son, he got run over with a truck and part of his brain was and it's still a lot of the body and everything, so you are just your mind. So it's hard to transcend that, and that's why a japa is so difficult, because you're trying to go to the soul, which is separate from the mind, but the mind in there giving you difficulty. But sometimes when you tell the mind to shut up and it actually listens, then you go deeper, you can experience that. So it's not often we have that realization, but it's really refreshing when we do.
Oh, thank you very much. I like your example. It made it way more easy to understand.
Also, we can understand that when we identify with upadis or designations, this is the function of the mind, concoction of the mind. That we're identifying, I have this degree, or I'm this, you know, wealthy, something. I mean, these are all mental concoctions. So in these things we have to ultimately just let go of. And people take great offense when these upadis of theirs are criticized or and then derided.
So purified intelligence definitely helps.
Yeah.
So we have to, it's described that the intelligence is very close to the soul, so we have to really work on the intelligence, constantly purify. And then, like I say, we can, when we see somebody of a different race or things like that, we can overcome that, those impurities that keep us on that mental platform.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice class. You mentioned some of the things that Prabhupada said were important for children to learn. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that now there are devotees who would say who would disagree with that and say that kids need more than that in order to be able to function in the world. So I wanted to know what your opinion was about that, or what you would say about that.
I guess I'm just old school because I like what Prabhupada said. And I had experience that if you stuck to what Prabhupada said in education, that things were better. I have a very nice example from my 26 years of doing Gurukula, that Prabhupada always said keep the boys and girls separate. Right? So at one point in ashram, one girl was attracted to one boy, and the parents agreed that they could associate together, and it would be all right. And then it came opportunity where the boys and all the boys' school and the girls' school could do a service together. And so we tried it. Complete disaster. Complete disaster. Everyone started pairing off. It was like the beginning of the end. You know? So if we just stuck with what Prabhupada said, it would remain pure. So, Papa, a little science, a little math, a lot of education, extra education, I don't know, but that's just my opinion. I'm just stick with what Papa said. Thank you. Okay.